the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our... oh my god, why am I not able to do this? Okay. The rogue traders of the His Enduring Light find themselves on the Gauntle World...
The Gauntle World of...
Of Feudal Grim.
At least we have a cold open.
Live from the Mundangerous Morgue in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 111 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about the end of the road and death spirals. But first, the rogue traders go out with a bang in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, and later, the triple threat topples every pillar in the Character Creation Forge.
So before we get to that, just a reminder, we are running another giveaway for two of our patrons. We will be giving away one copy of Pathfinder Pocket Edition Starter Pack, which is the core book, and then the bestiary, both in the smaller, more portable paperback edition.
Although they include all of the rules, just physically smaller.
Right. And then one copy of the Curse of the Crimson Throne Adventure Path for Pathfinder. Which is a neat little adventure path. It's beautiful production value in its normal hardcover form.
So everyone who is one of our patrons as of September 30th will be entered. The first name we draw gets to pick which of those prizes you want, and the second name gets the other one.
And then also want to remind everybody we will be at PAX Unplugged in November.
November 17th through 19th. That's in Philadelphia.
We have not heard yet if our panels were approved, but it's possible we could be speaking there. Otherwise, we'll just be hanging out and playing games.
Maybe even just doing the panels to no one.
Right.
Although that might happen even if we're approved.
Right. and then I will be at a Catacon the week before that. That's November 10th through 12th, I think, in Dayton, Ohio.
Your November's packed.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of gaming in November.
You could just skip Thanksgiving.
I might have to.
All right, speaking of ignoring family ties, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our rogue trader game played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And the rogue traders of the His Enduring Light find themselves on the feudal world of Gauntlegrim, where they are in the mix on the front lines with the Imperial Guard, trying desperately to prove that they are not heretics.
Which is tough, because some of us are.
Yes. and you were most recently tasked with hunting down a war truck that was under construction by the Orc forces, and... eliminating it and hoping to repel their surge towards your lines.
So, Shane, recently, friend of the show, Matt Perotti, has been, well, making fun of us for having the war truck be such a big deal. And I, as someone who's never played tabletop Warhammer,
right,
don't really understand, because I remember in the story how it was terrifying.
It was terrifying.
And also the pictures of it are scary, because I Googled it.
The pictures of it are very scary, because I encouraged you to Google it.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, though, in terms of statistics for the tabletop game, is a war truck that big a deal?
No, it's like a troop transport.
Okay, but think of it this way. We're playing Dark Heresy, right?
Right.
For those of you who haven't played the game, it's a system where you don't really get like really high hit points, you know, or like amazing armor. If you get run over by a tank, you're gonna die.
Right. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that in the tabletop game, you are playing the Imperial Guard, who have dozens of squads and dozens of vehicles that are able to deal with a war truck, right? Or you're playing Space Marines, who are superhumans, or you're playing another alien species. But you guys are worse than Imperial Guard, because you don't even have fully equipped Imperial Guard with you. And, you know, you're just six or sometimes seven guys and gals with slightly better guns.
Yeah, it's a dude.
Right. And then in the game, right, the war truck, as you would come to find out when you finally destroyed it, was also playing host to the war boss. So it was significantly more built up than perhaps what you might think of as like your standard tabletop 40K war truck.
because the orcs on the war truck were thinking, wow, the war boss is on this war truck. It must be amazing.
It must be an amazing truck. Exactly.
Fortunately, we were able to blow it up.
Right. You were. With a number of crack missiles. The way you blow up most things when you're an Imperial Guardsman.
And I fully expected good things to happen, but only bad things happened.
Yeah, because you made the war boss very angry that his mobile throne, his mobile like veneration of himself was destroyed.
His mobile throne. He was busy tweeting.
Right.
On his throne.
On his throne.
Minding his own business. And then we blew it up.
Right. I mean, minding his own business, careening at breakneck speeds directly towards the front lines, whatever. But yeah. And then he hops out and roars and is quite upset. And your group is now sort of split in two.
Dumb.
Because, yeah, you have disembarked from the gun cutter, which was severely injured.
Yeah, we landed quite a ways away because one more hit and it would explode.
Right.
And as we've learned from the Dark Heresy 2nd Edition vehicle rules, when your vehicle explodes, everybody dies.
Yeah.
So we landed it very far away and then ran.
That's you put that right. When your vehicle explodes, everybody dies. When the orc's vehicle explodes, it spawns a war boss.
Right, because they think, oh, only a war boss could have survived that explosion.
Exactly. Turns out when you run on hopes and psychic energy, you don't have a lot of explosives.
It's like the alt-right, hopefully.
So the party then converges on them, right? And the war boss rises with his honor guard of orc knobs, and this huge, desperate, vicious melee breaks out.
Also dumb.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't really have any other choice, right?
No.
Like, you've got to do something, and this is the chance to win the war and prove you're not heretics, and hopefully get that fat contract at the end of it that will make you a ton of money, because you're rogue traders, right?
Yeah, you do it for the emperor and the money.
Right. And so you end up facing some very orcish tactics that you haven't seen before. These knobs are carrying stick bombs. They have explosives, which they are happy to throw at you, even while you're engaged with other orcs.
Yeah, it's not pleasant, because you need to engage in order to attack the orcs, and then they just blow everyone up.
Yeah, they're happy to blow up their own orcs to get to you.
Yeah, and, you know, orcs are pretty durable, and we are less durable.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are about on par with an orc.
A regular orc.
Yeah.
Yeah, what with our fairly good gear.
Right.
But I think in the future of Gontalgrim, the garbage world of Gontalgrim, they will sing songs of this battle.
Yes, the Imperial records will note various acts of heroism from the intrepid rogue traders of the His Enduring Light. There was Seneschal Trix, who suffered a gut wound, but somehow found the composure to behead the knob who had wounded him.
I believe this was the second time Trix was split stem to stern.
Yes.
Oh, fate points. Archmilitant Trank was able to pin down a knob to free up Draco, who booked it to reinforce everyone else.
Yeah, and his reinforcement basically kept the party alive long enough to win.
Well, we were the only ones fast enough to actually kite.
Right.
So it was run and shoot, run and shoot.
Voidmaster Echo, by the grace of the Emperor, managed to squeeze off a crack missile directly into the advancing war boss, whose surprise at the severe damage done to his chest was matched only by his ensuing rage.
Oh, okay. Now, let's make this clear. This is our player, Steph, who did this. So obviously, it means that this only happened because it had to happen, because she only rolls well
right
when there's no other option.
Exactly.
We had used crack missile launchers, which are big, heavy weapons that a normal human being like can't tote around. And so she needed to make a check to heft a crack missile launcher with her bare hands, shoot it without any training, and hit the war boss.
Mm-hmm.
All successful rolls.
Right. And then there is the faithful tech priest of the Adeptus Mechanicus, Doc. Not a heretic at all.
Yes. Tech priest, not a heretic, Doc.
Right.
No, that's my given name. Not a heretic.
Right. He used his various mechanical parts to soak an unimaginable amount of the Orcish Fury. For all of the kiting that Draco and Trank were able to do against the orcs, Doc basically just stood in and took it, freeing up the other characters to more, you know, select their targets.
He is more metal than man.
That's, yes, both M-E-T-T-L-E and M-E-T-A-L. And all of this was important in the lead up to what became known as the grenade heard round the world of Gontalgrim.
I mean, if that went off as well as the shot heard round the world, then probably we were successful, right?
Right. Success. It comes in steps.
And with a cost.
So what happened was a grenade from one side or the other got tossed into the melee. I suspect it was a reinforcing Draco on a desperate last shot gambit, but it could have easily have been an orc. You know, the Imperial records are not very clear on this. But what is clear is that explosion set off all of Trix's spare ammunition, which in turn set off all of the orc stick bombs amongst the dead bodies of orcs that were piling, and set off a detonation that would rival a Munitorum disposal.
And left a smoking crater 10 meters across.
Yeah. And your character, Trank, was miraculously not in that crater.
At a safe distance because he's a smarter, safer Trank.
Yeah. So what was it like for Trank walking up to the remains of that smoldering crater?
You know when you get too excited about a frozen pizza and you open the oven without realizing that it is, in fact, 475 degrees in there?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And you just get that hot wave on your face and you realize, oh, I've done some damage. It was like that, but from about 50 meters away.
Right. And then instead of getting that delicious, delicious DiGiorno, all you got were bits of human and orcish parts strewn about the battlefield.
It's not delivery. It's disgusting.
Right.
So Draco and Trank, fortunately still at a distance, creep up to the crater, fully expecting that, well, actually crossing our fingers that everyone was dead. Because, hate to say it, if our allies are not dead, then the orcs are probably not dead either.
Right.
Which means we've got a problem. There are orc parts and human parts all over the place. But thanks to the grace of the Emperor and fate points.
Yes.
Doc, Trix, and Echo are all barely alive.
Yeah, severe need for augmetics.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Technically are going to see another day.
Not all of their limbs are alive or organs.
Right. Now they all get to be more machine than man.
But we are going to patch them up.
And we'll find out what happens next week.
So, Shane, this is an appropriate subject, given what we've just heard out of Dynasty Unwarranted.
Mm-hmm.
This week, we are talking about death spirals. So, can you explain for the listeners, what do we mean when we're talking about a death spiral?
Yeah, so death spirals are the mechanical construction where characters get worse at their abilities the closer they get to death. So, as your injuries begin to mount, you become less effective, right? Which is very... hewing towards simulationism, right? Like, the more beat up I get, the less effective I am as a boxer.
Is that how that works?
For me personally, yes.
I don't know anything about sports.
Okay.
You don't get better and faster
turns
as
out,
you get hit?
Turns now? Out, no.
No, it's like, well, yeah. What is that, 13th age? Is that what does that? As
yeah,
the fight goes
the
on?
Escalation
yeah.
Die. Yeah.
Yeah. Some video games do this. Oh, so you think about, like, well, I'm going to date myself. Street Fighter. It doesn't matter how much of your health bar you have left. You are still as effective a fighter
right.
as when you're at full health.
Yeah, that Hadouken works no matter how much health you have left.
Right. But I don't know, there was an old game called Bushido Blade,
mm-hmm.
which was basically like two guys with katanas, right? And if you hit someone in the arm, their arm stopped working.
Right, right.
So, of course, hit them as quickly as possible.
Right. It kind of becomes an attrition thing, right? Mm-hmm.
The death spiral is something that a lot of games throw out to make themselves seem, like you said, more simulationist, but also more different from the big player on the field, Dungeons & Dragons, which doesn't have this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hallmark of D&D, is that your character at one hit point is just as effective as she is at 100, right? It does not make a difference until you cross the threshold of zero.
Mm-hmm.
And even in fourth edition, you actually powered up a little bit because some classes got abilities as they got bloody.
Right. And enemies as well.
Yeah.
But we'll set that aside for a bit because that kind of game mechanic has other issues.
Right.
The thing we see, though, is the death spiral swings too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you take that first wound or whatever it's called, you're now at a penalty, which means it's much harder for you to counterattack or to make a comeback.
Or to avoid taking further damage or whatever it is, right?
Right. Like your armor has gotten chipped away or you're slower and so you can't react as quickly.
Yeah. And so the prototypical one that I think of for RPG death spirals is Savage Worlds.
Because
mm-hmm. Savage Worlds is the system that runs Deadlands, so it's got a place in my heart because I love that setting. And also, I think it's one of the bigger non-D&D games. And I think a lot of people have exposure to it. Mm-hmm. And basically how that works, right? The general system is that you need to roll a 4. And you have a few pluses and minuses, you know, maybe a +1 or a +2 to any given thing. But a lot of times you're just rolling a die and trying to get 4. As you take wounds, you get a -1, and it's progressive. So as you're close to dying, you're at a -3. And it's like, why not just make me dead? I can't do anything anyway.
Mm-hmm. I may as well run and hide, except I can't run and I can't hide.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because I can also only take like half actions.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we've talked about this on the show before, but we talk out loud and in real life and at games a lot about we don't really like the death spiral. Most games that use it are worse because of those mechanics.
Yeah, I think it's something that we have mentioned as we talked about games, but we haven't really talked about why we feel that way. And it's something that we've gotten some questions about, so we kind of wanted to do an episode on it, right? Talk a little bit about, you know, what it is we don't like about them, and then what are some of the cases where we do like them, and then how can you address them if you're feeling similarly? You know, how do we deal with that stuff?
Yeah, if you're a player in a Savage World or Star Wars Saga game, and this has come up and you don't like it, what can you suggest that, you know, the table does differently? Or as a GM, if you just want to nip this in the bud right at the beginning, what are some potential options? So first off, Shane, what is it that makes them bad?
Okay, so we have like a couple core tenets of how we look at games, right? Because I don't think we hew particularly simulationist. I think we're comfortable with relatively narrative games, but mm-hmm. we also don't generally prefer them, right? Like, we like mechanical games.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of have these core assumptions, right, that sort of are how we evaluate games. So one of them is that we think the threat of death or loss of characters makes games better because it adds tension and drama. Like, I don't think our complaint is ever, I hate when my character dies, right? Like, I think that's a part of the games that we like.
Right. That's not to say that we always want to play a game where things are very gritty and, you know, there's an excellent chance that you're going to be dying or rotating through characters. It just, it's nice that it is always a potential outcome.
Right, yeah. Then I think another thing is the way that we view mechanics is that they should work towards telling the story that the game is selling you, right? Like, D&D sells you heroic high adventure, so I think the mechanic should push you towards that kind of story, right? Savage Worlds, or Deadlands, right, sells you the story of cowboys who are in over their heads.
Yeah, so the mechanics should aid the GM and the players in being able to tell that story. It shouldn't be getting in the way or even completely preventing them from being able to do that.
Right.
And if you think about, you know, a traditional cowboy shootout, the good guys never win right off the bat.
Right.
You know, you always get beat down first and then you make a comeback.
Exactly. So then it's sort of part of that, right, is that mechanics should incentivize players to play the way they need to fit that story, right? So if I'm playing Phoenix Dawn Command and this is a game about heroic sacrifice, then the game should be encouraging me to make heroic sacrifices, right?
As it does.
And it does, yeah. It's a great example of that. And that's what I look for in my games, right? And give me rewards and encourage me to do the things that I'm supposed to do to tell the stories you want me to tell.
Right, because if you are presented with the different options for what you can do as a player in a game, attempting to do something that you're pretty sure you're going to succeed at, or that you have a good chance of succeeding at, is more fun than trying to attempt something that you're pretty sure is just not going to work out, but you just don't have any better options.
Right. Yeah. Given a choice, I would rather succeed. Like, I would rather have a little bit of control over where things are going than just leaving it to dice.
Right. Like, I hate being like, well, I did the math on this and there is a 10% chance that this actually does anything. Like, well, I even roll these dice.
Right.
I guess I'll roll it if there's literally nothing else I can do. But if I have a chance to do anything else, you know, crawl to the hatch and like make a skill check, I'd rather do that.
Right.
Except, of course, Death Spiral often affects your ability to make skill checks as well.
Yeah. So with that frame of reference, right, like disclosure of who we are as gamers and how we look at game design.
Yeah, big jerks.
Right. One of our complaints, or the one that's most important to me, is when Death Spirals impact play too much. Right, either because it's coming up too often, right? Like, it's too easy to start the death spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm engaging with that in every single fight, like, that makes me feel like I'm never really at full strength, and then I'm never really my character, like, my best character.
Yeah, I'm bits of my character, or I am always operating at half capacity.
Yeah, I'm the bullet-riddled shell of who my character was supposed to be.
And if you think about the fictions that we're trying to emulate, the bullet-riddled shell is usually one of the best versions of the fictional character.
That's exactly.
Bruce Willis at the end of Die Hard is so much more effective than Bruce Willis at the beginning of Die Hard.
Right.
Right. Inigo Montoya is better after he gets stabbed in the front.
Yep.
And of course, if the penalties are too heavy, you just can't succeed at anything. And you feel like you're wasting your turn. You know, okay, I'm up, but who cares?
Right.
You know, I might as well go make a sandwich while you guys handle this.
And it's weird, right? Like, that is absolutely how I feel about it. But when my character dies at the table, I am suddenly so much more engaged in what's going on at the table, right? Because, like, I want to know, was it worth it? But if I'm just, like, limping along and I can't really do anything effective, like, I begin to get kind of, like, checked out. Like, I know my character is headed down that path, and I only have to pay attention on my turn because I can only do one thing and this is pointless.
Yeah, the thing that happens to me, I mean, obviously we do a lot of character building and character creation no matter what system we're playing. But what I always end up doing in Savage World or Eclipse Phase or anything with a Death Spiral is I take the freaking omnipresent talents or abilities or advantages that let me ignore some of the Death Spiral.
Exactly.
And it just ends up being like this feat tax. Or this, like, point tax.
To get to play the game the way it's written.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll almost always have a character that can ignore two wounds or whatever.
Right.
You know, or ignore two wound penalties.
Yeah.
Right? It's not even that I can ignore two wounds. I'm still wounded.
I still lose my hand.
That's right. I'm still that much closer to death.
Right.
Right? It doesn't give me more HP. It just prevents me from sucking more.
Right.
And it doesn't even feel like I've gotten anything out of that advantage. Right? I've paid points for it. Now, it only comes into play after bad things happen, and all it does is prevent things from getting even worse after a bad thing has already occurred.
Yeah, it's like I paid points at character creation in order to make the game we're playing feel more like a game I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Like, the worst kind of tax. Another issue that we sometimes have with Death Spirals, and this is probably some of the edge cases, right, is when Death Spirals feel arbitrary. Particularly, like, if I choose to enter the Death Spiral as a means of doing something, right? Like, and Phoenix is a good example of that. If I choose to take those penalties on my character in order to enable my party to do cool things, right? Great. Like, I can stomach those penalties. I can take that as a player, as that's like my sacrifice. That's me doing my job to make sure we win as a team. But like, when the first round of combat is I get shot in the stomach by a gunslinger
because I rolled poorly on my initiative check,
right? And I didn't get a chance to dodge it or whatever, right? Like, cool. Like, now I'm at a -1 or even a -2 going forward. I'm like, okay, cool. So like, why did you even have me come into this fight? Like, you could have just said, hey, take both of our characters out and, like, I won't come this week. And it's more fun for me. I could do anything else.
Yeah, that arbitrariness. One of the mechanical issues, or one of the gameplay issues you get into when you're dealing with an obvious and harsh death spiral is it's almost always better to alpha strike. It's almost always better to go first and to spec for a character that can go first as often as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just shoot everyone else first, and they're NPCs, so who cares if they didn't get any spotlight time?
Right, right.
Which just means that, you know, in general, dexterity-based characters are better, ranged characters are better.
Or if you have action economy, like mm-hmm. scaling, anyone who can act multiple times is better. But yeah, it becomes a game of getting your enemies into that death spiral before they can get you into it.
Yeah, it feels a bit like some of the issues that we had with Greyhawk Initiative a few weeks ago, which mm-hmm. is, oh, like, if archers always go first, I should just be an archer,
right?
Because melee sucks.
Right. Yeah. Now just imagine if you tacked a death spiral onto that.
Right.
You know, like you have an ongoing disadvantage because you took 20 damage at a time.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I hate about this is less arbitrary, but sort of all-encompassing death spirals is that it's usually you get a penalty to everything across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Like in D&D terms, it's when you roll a d20, you take a -1 or a -2.
Right.
It doesn't matter what kind of check you're making. It doesn't matter, like, if I got cut on my arm, I'm still taking a penalty to my lore checks.
Right.
Or, you know, like, searching a database.
Yep.
Or like, being charming.
Right. Well, because it's distracting.
Of course. Right. 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 I'm a hero. I'm a grand hero flying through, like, space.
Right.
You know, dodging asteroids. But, man, this paper cut.
Right.
Just can't focus.
Right.
But that's why I took the focused advantage. Yeah, I think it's much more rare to see a death spiral that is very specific. And, you know, I can understand. If I get shot in the right arm, whatever, and I am right-handed, I can understand not being able to two-weapon fight anymore.
Right.
Totally get that.
Yep.
You know, and maybe I've got to use my offhand, and actually I'm worse with that hand. And so maybe I take an attack penalty. But I don't see why I'm taking a penalty to running away.
Yeah. Well, you see, the leg bone's connected to the arm
bone. Oh, of course. Silly me.
Yeah, and this is sort of a broader thing of where the penalties you're taking and the mechanics don't mesh with the fiction of the story you're telling, right? Like, but that's the worst arbitrary thing of all, is like, this doesn't make sense in story. It doesn't really make sense in rules. And we're doing it because it's printed there.
Yeah. And because someone thought it would be good for verisimilitude, although it's not.
Right.
Because there's rarely a mechanic for, okay, I center myself and like really focus.
Right.
All right. So now you agree with us, obviously, that mostly death spirals are garbage. Except for the few times when they're not, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there are cases where the death spiral is in a game and we like the game and the death spiral isn't distracting from it, right? So like let's figure out what those cases are. I think the first one for me is when this death spiral is pretty shallow, so that the penalties that you're getting are all relatively minor and they never feel like wholly crippling, right? Like the -1 in Savage Worlds is a huge penalty,
mm-hmm.
but a -1 in D&D is nothing, you know, like especially in like 3.5, right? Like a -1 here or there is like whatever, I'm still at a +22.
Right. When Angela was running our Dark Sun game, well, he still is, but when we first started it, we were trying to make things grittier, and so he had this house rule where if someone scores a critical hit against you, your armor is damaged, you take a -1 to AC until it gets repaired.
Mm-hmm.
That is technically a death spiral.
Right.
But a -1 to AC, while it hurts, is not a crippling penalty. It didn't affect your attack. It didn't affect your saving throws against other types of damage. It was just, you know, physical damage versus, like, if you were using that particular kind of armor.
Right. And also, like, in D&D, AC is sort of just a wink and nod with your dungeon master anyway, right? Like, if he wants to hit you, he hits you. And if he doesn't want to hit you, he misses.
Well, and also, one off of, like, 16
right.
isn't so bad.
Right.
Also, it's easier to deal with when the spiral happens much, much later in gameplay. Like, in the first round of combat, you start down the spiral, it is affecting everything that you do pretty much the entire time that you play your character.
Right.
But if it only comes in at, you know, round 4 or 5, then the vast majority of your time that you're actually playing your character, you're at full capacity.
Yeah. And the example of this that I like is Dark Heresy. Because Dark Heresy, being a 40K game, right, with its grimdark pedigree, is deadly. And it can suck as a character sometimes to, like, take penalties for things and have random results go very negative. But I think what's helpful about that is that you have a pool of wounds that you can soak without any repercussions at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets you usually through the first couple rounds of combat. Then you've got, you start taking critical damage, which is, you know, specific effects that increase each time you add to that total. But the earlier ones, like one or two critical, they're minor inconveniences, right? It's like a minus 10 on your next test, or like the blood loss condition or stuff like that, which isn't, you know, it can maybe cost you a half action or give a little less odds of succeeding, but it doesn't feel like I have to do something different.
Right. Or it'll be, you know, minus 10 to a weapon skill test.
Right.
But maybe I'm a shooter.
I can still shoot. Right. Exactly. And then, you know, as you get into the sort of the middle, the fours to six range, like certain areas and certain damage types, yeah, that might start to be a pretty big impact. In a lot of areas and a lot of damage types, okay, yeah, like now I have, you know, a penalty for the rest of this fight. And that's fine, because we're probably on round five or six of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you go one more wound and you're probably dead.
Right, it's like stepping off the continental shelf.
Yeah, exactly. Like you just drop off a cliff and like now you're burning fate points or you're dead, which is fine, right? Like I don't have to exist in that shell of a character state for very long. It's just like kind of the warning track before telling me, hey, you're gonna die now, get ready for it.
Yeah, and the way the damage is dealt out, it's rare that you go from, hey, I'm doing all right, to, okay, I explode in a ball of fiery death.
Right.
Usually it's, oh man, I'm actually not doing so well. I just took a critical wound.
I am slowly but surely headed towards a ball of fiery death.
Right. It's one or more hits and then grenade cascade.
Right.
Everybody get away.
But I think that's important, though. The end result is obviously bad, but the majority of your gameplay is not going to be impeded by the death spiral. And I think that's what makes it the kind that I like to play with.
Yeah, it still feels very gritty because you always know that death is around the corner. But it's around the corner that like you stuck your head out in front of.
Right.
Not, oh man, as soon as I got out of bed, like I stepped in a nail and now the whole day sucks.
Right. And then another thing for me that is interesting, though I have not seen it very often in games, is the idea of a spiral that's mixed. It's not just a death spiral. So you take penalties in certain things as you get closer to dying, but you also get benefits in other ways as you get closer to dying, so that your character is changing, but you still have things that you can do effectively.
Yeah, this is what you alluded to with the 4th edition D&D Bloodied Condition.
Right.
Where once you are below half of your maximum hit points, some classes or some races had abilities that made them better or faster or stronger or hit for more damage.
Right.
Or you had player characters that could utilize that. They had abilities that only worked on creatures that were below half of their maximum hit points. So you could actually accelerate that sort of slog at the end of the game.
Right. Yeah, and monsters had those abilities against you as well, so that puts you, you know, in increasing peril as you got bloodied.
Yeah, I think of it like a Zelda game, where you know the boss is like one or two hits away from dying when they start moving twice as fast.
Yeah.
Or turn red.
Right. And then there's also definitely like a design space for games that are about these types of death spirals. Right, like if the story of our game is we are dying characters struggling to get through this, right, and each incident that occurs like makes it harder for us to continue to exist and closer to the edge, and this is the story of how we got as far as we could, right? It's basically Call of Cthulhu, right?
Mm.
Except instead of physically dying, it's your sanity.
It's just another HP track.
Right, but you can sign up for that game, right? Like, that makes sense. That's the narrative of Call of Cthulhu, is that, like, your slow descent into madness, and your unavoidable descent into madness. That's great, right? Like, I don't want to say that those games aren't good and that they should get rid of their death spiral, because those games are a death spiral. That's the arc of a character. I would argue that that is not the point of Savage Worlds. Like, that's not the story it's built to tell.
Yeah, and it can be handled, I think, in a more palatable way when the slope is very, very shallow. So if you think about Dark Heresy 2nd Edition's Fate Points system, as you burn fate to keep from dying, you actually have fewer rerolls, because that's what you use fate points for on a session-to-session basis.
Right.
And so your character does get a little bit worse each time you burn fate.
Yep.
It's actually something I don't really like about the system. I have considered potentially flipping it around, where you start with one.
I've been trying to figure out a way to make that.
You burn fate once, now you have two you can use per session.
Yeah, I'm a little frustrated as the GM that you guys are going to feel a lot less effective as you're like getting to sort of the apex of your career.
Right. But when I think about it, that is not a spiral that has sort of frustrated me on a session by session basis.
Right.
Whereas Savage World typically does.
Yep.
Just because it's happening, or it is affecting me less often, and only at the end of a session. Right. So if I started with three fate points, if I burn one, well, the first two times that I would have used them normally, everything's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's only when I get to the point where I'm like, ugh, I don't have another one,
right,
which is probably, you know, the last third of a session,
right,
that it begins to affect me.
For sure. I will say, as the GM in that situation, it means that I get more control of the narrative earlier on in the session, because you guys are more hesitant to use your fate.
No, that's true, because we always need a sandbag one.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can kind of drive, I can make sure you get to where the story is expecting you to be a little bit easier. But overall, I would rather you guys feel like yourselves than I would have that little modicum of control.
I think you should flip it around so that Trix now has all the rerolls.
Great.
I mean, he's earned them.
He kind of has. Just can't help dying. He's just a good dyer.
Great dyer. Good charger. Great dyer.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So if you are a player or a GM running one of these systems that has a death spiral and you don't like it, what are some options for changing it or fixing it?
I mean, I think our main approach is, as we alluded to earlier, is to flip it into a hero spiral. Mm-hmm. So as you get closer to death, you increase your abilities. You become more likely to succeed. Like in Savage Worlds, that would be like just a straight up inversion, right? Like you were a minus one, but now you're wounded, so you're a plus one.
Mm-hmm.
I think in other games, you probably need to figure that out a little more case by case. Like Dark Heresy, for example, like maybe the fate points we could flip, but the wound track we probably would need to do a little bit more with to figure out how that would kind of affect it.
Right. And you also need to think about the kinds of players you have at the table. We talked about this when we were running Phoenix Dawn Command. My first question was, okay, if I get more powerful after I die and we're trying to save the world, why don't I just kill myself?
Right.
And come back more powerful and have a better chance of saving the world?
Right.
And the answer was from Keith Baker was basically,
you might not come back.
You might not come back. And it's not really in the spirit of the game.
Right.
So like play it out.
Yep.
Which is, I think, is a conversation to have when, I mean, even in Savage Worlds or something like Star Wars Saga, where the penalties are -1, -2, -5, -10. That's the order they go.
Mm-hmm.
I might want to wound myself right off the bat to get a +1.
Right.
I might even do it twice to get a +2 consistently.
Right. Or rather than wound yourself, right? Not fully heal, like jump back into the fray earlier.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh no, I ran out of hit dice. That's too bad. No, save your spells.
Yeah, I think, and that's important, right? Is that is going to change the nature of the story, because you're changing the incentives for the players. Like you're encouraging them to play wounded,
mm-hmm.
And that's going to lead, rather than characters who are terrified of being hurt and very conservative and you know, strike hard, strike first, strike fast, they're going to now be like, great, let me wade into combat and like start, you know, amping up my damage, because I need to get a few hits on me before I can really be fully formed.
And that can be a really fun game to play. I think it can just be handled with a conversation at the table, which is, okay, this is meant to be a reward for when bad things already happen. Like, maybe don't try to game it. But at the same time, keep in mind that if you guys are really gung-ho about like going to this gunfight because you're wounded and you think you're going to be able to perform really well, you're already halfway dead.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not going to be able to last long if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, and I think that's the outcome, right? Is like you end up with stories of characters who are on a knife's edge. Like, you know, one more hit is going to knock you out, but man, you are a monster while you're still standing.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty cool story.
Those are the kind of stories we like. So that's clearly why we're advertising this.
I'm a golden god with one hit point.
Right. Hello, glass cannon.
The other thing you could potentially do, which requires much less work, is just throw out the death spiral. So yeah. In Savage Worlds, just don't give people penalties once they've actually taken wounds, at least penalties to their actions once they've taken wounds. And this does mean, you know, make sure nobody is spending points on abilities they're not going to use anymore, like ignoring wound penalties.
Right.
But I think for the most part, people are going to be happy not to have to buy that or, you know, basically feel like they've gotten a refund.
Yeah, and I mean, if there are classes in your game that interact heavily with it, right, you want to think about those classes and at least make sure that no one is heavily interested in playing them.
Right, but do keep in mind that if you don't have the death spiral in a game that was built with it, it's possible that combats or encounters end up lasting longer or feeling more like a slog.
Right.
Especially if you take away the death spiral from NPCs or enemies.
Yep.
Because it's just going to be harder to take them down.
Right.
Which, you know, I could potentially see getting rid of the penalties for PCs and not for NPCs, although you're still then encouraging alpha strikes.
It's going to make combat that much faster. Mm-hmm. I think it's just going to multiply, right? Like it's just a multiplicative effect of we don't have the penalties that we would have at the point when you are still taking those penalties. So mm-hmm. We're getting bonus on both sides.
What I might just do is take it away from PCs. Also take it away from NPCs, but then do something to make them a bit easier to kill. It's less paperwork in the long run, but maybe they just have fewer HP or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or leave it in for a certain type of fight, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. A boss fight, certainly.
Yeah, like a boss fight might have it, or even take it away for a boss fight and leave it for the more regular fights, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Death Spiral effects, right? Like, they're not the worst thing in the world. If you have a boss fight and they have a gun that shoots like barbed bullets
mm-hmm.
or barbed arrows or whatever, and it causes penalties to anyone that gets hit, that's pretty terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually totally okay with using that. It's just not across the board all the time for every single combat, even if this is a bar fight.
Right. Yeah. So to wrap it up, right, I think
to spiral down.
Yes. To oblivion.
We're in the northern hemisphere, so I think it's clockwise. Is that it?
I believe that's the rumor.
Please flush us out.
Yeah. If you are enjoying Games of the Death Spiral, sorry for wasting the past 25 minutes.
No, we've definitely convinced them.
If we have convinced you, great. Please let us know how your experience went, right? Like, as you play games and sort of play with them and mess with the design of games, right? Like, tell people how it went. Like, what was that game experience like? How was it different? Because I think that's how we learn and grow and develop more tools to tell the stories that we want to tell.
Yeah, although I will note that I rarely hear stories when people, you know, tell the tales of their awesome adventure or session. It is rarely, oh, and then they had a -3, and so, like, they just failed again.
Right.
And then, you know, they tried to, like, hack, and they also failed. And then they ran away, and they just got shot in the face because they couldn't dodge. Awesome.
Yeah, best Shadowrun ever. All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
That's me not dodging yet again. I can only take a half action.
Well, let's go get you respect in the Character Creation Forge. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, at Mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, at Evil Sans Carne, that's Malice minus Meat.
And you can tweet at the show, at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram, at TotalPartyThrill. So this week in the Character Creation Forge, it is episode 111. I guess, are we supposed to make a wish? Is that how this works?
No, not till we get to 11:11.
Oh, of course. So okay.
900 episodes of...
Oh, God.
Wait, no, 1,000 episodes away.
Oh, my God. I mean, yay, that'll be great.
Right.
We won't run out of content.
That won't be 30 years from now.
All right, so in homage, I suppose...
Of our numerical stylings.
Mm-hmm, we have created a build called the Triple Threat. Shane, what are the three threats?
Singing, dancing, and acting.
Yes, obviously. I thought it was writing, directing, and producing.
Well, I guess it depends on which domain we're talking.
Yeah, producing doesn't count.
The classical triple threat would be... so in our case, it will be excelling in the three pillars of gameplay, which are, of course, combat, exploration, and interaction. Basically social.
Rules lawyering, power gaming.
Munchkinizing.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And snacks.
No, it's neck bearding is actually the last one.
All right. So this was not tough, but we needed to find something that was in the right niche because, honestly, we try to build characters every week that are good at all three pillars.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we got something that we haven't seen before. Shane, what's the build?
So... Battlemaster Fighter 11, Ranger 1, Lorebard 8.
Oh, poor Ranger 1.
Yeah, Ranger 1 is the new Rogue 1.
It's because Star Wars took it from us.
Right.
I mean, we'll see what happens with Ranger if we're going to get a revised one or new subclasses in...
Xanathar.
Yeah, exactly, in November.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed. But anyway, for now, Ranger 1.
Okay, so from Fighter, we're Battlemaster, so we'll get three attacks, we'll get all of the armor, weapons, and shields that we can use. We also get Action Surge for more attacks, or the ability to cast two spells in a turn. And we, of course, get the Battlemaster Maneuvers, which we love.
From Ranger, we get Tracking, a favored enemy, and a favored terrain, which... Well, you're going to want to optimize. Ask your GM or ask the other players at the table, what are we going to be spending the most time in?
Right.
If it's Dark Sun, choose desert.
Yeah, I like that we had to find multiple synonyms for desert to split up the ranger tracking.
Right.
No, that's scrubland. No, that's hard scrabble.
Yeah, yeah. Jim is playing a ranger. Oh.
Nope. Jim was playing
a ranger in our Dark Sun game, and Angelo had to be like, yeah, you can't just pick desert. Also, my druid couldn't just pick desert.
Right.
From Bard, you'll get two expertises, jack of all trades, which means you're just so good at so many different skills. A D8 inspiration die, which you can use with cutting words to either make you safer in combat or your allies. You'll get three additional skills, as well as another one when you multiclass into Bard for four more skills. A counter charm, which is fine, and, of course, two magical secrets. So you get to pick two spells from any class you want. And I believe at level 6, Lore Bard, those are the ones that are actually additional spells and not just more spells you can choose from. You actually get to know two more spells.
Right, right. Worth noting here that you should probably take survival with one of your expertises, mm-hmm. just because that's the way you master the exploration pillar, right? Ranger 1 and one expertise in survival and you're good to go.
Yeah, and I would note that you've only got 8 bard levels here, so you're not like the world's most amazing spellcaster, but you can take the ritual caster feat and be basically the world's most amazing spellcaster.
Ritualist, yeah.
So the level order, again, you don't need to follow these. I think you could take one level of each and feel like you are absolutely good at everything, right? Just Fighter 1, Bard 1, Ranger 1. But if you were going to do this in the most optimal way, I'd probably start off with Fighter, get your armor and weapon proficiencies, then drop into Bard, then go Fighter 5 for your extra attack, Bard 6 so that your... inspiration dice refresh on a short rest rather than a long rest, and you get your magical secrets.
Yeah, and then that takes you to level 11, so we would get Ranger then at that point. That would be our 12th level. And then after that, you can pick your favorite of Fighter or Bard.
Right. I prefer to finish out Fighter first to get that third attack.
Right.
Because, I don't know, 4th level Bard spells are like, eh.
Right. So, Ishin, who is your triple threat?
She's a little sister who was not in line to inherit the throne.
Oh, not a halfling sister. Okay.
Maybe it could be a halfling, although I probably wouldn't do halfling for this build specifically. Probably half elf.
Half elf.
Go listen to the half elf episode if you're wondering why. little sister, so second in line to the throne, or maybe even seventh in line. Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. You know these royal families. It's just
too many kids.
I know. Ugh. Burden on society.
Wrap it up.
And she's always felt the need to prove herself because, right, first child gets the throne, second child gets the, business, and the third one needs to start going out and, like, finding someone to marry.
Gets to join the church.
That's right. It's our tithes at the church. Seventh kid, not many prospects for you. You're basically just sort of sitting around waiting for a political assassination.
Mm-hmm. Or organizing a political assassination.
A cataclysm, if you will.
Why wait for fate to intervene?
So she's got a lot to prove because she probably didn't even get that much time with mom and dad. Probably spent most of the time with the governess.
Mm-hmm.
Shipped off to random colleges, gets to dabble, right? Oh, I'll spend some time at war college, and then I'll go visit our great uncle to spend a summer learning fencing. But turns out she's actually good at all of these things,
mm-hmm.
Excels at all of them, and decides that the best way to actually make a name for herself, apart from the name that she's already got, is adventuring. And so here she is, and she's going to prove to you that she, anything you can do, she can do better.
Okay. All right. A little bit of a dilettante kind of theme to it.
It's one of my favorite archetypes.
Yep.
All right. What about your triple threat?
So my triple threat is a relatively standard adventurer. Maybe started as a caravan guard or a soldier, maybe a mercenary, from a humble family. And this is the easiest path for her to gain wealth and success, right? So she has a sick parent or a little brother who is struggling and she's trying to support. And so she takes up adventuring, and it's just pragmatism, right? She's charismatic. She's also good with a sword, pretty strong fighter. So she's useful to have around, and she eventually just rounds out her skill set, taking up the more wilderness survival kind of skills that she needs to really be a rounded adventurer.
Can't depend on anyone when you're a caravan guard.
Right.
Probably ex-cons. Yeah.
Definitely not the merchant.
Right. Sometimes you need to fight off the goblins and then fight the merchant to get paid.
Right. You fight the goblins on the road. You fight the merchant in court. It's all fine.
Got to make some money. All right. I guess I'll perform at the tavern.
Collect some stories from the road, you know.
I mean, if you take expertise in performance, then you can sing and dance and act.
Right. All right, so before we wrap up, we just want to take a moment to say thank you to our Patreon supporters.
Yes, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. Every single week.
Yeah, and we are getting tantalizingly close now to the $200 goal. So once we get to our $200 level, we will release the codex of all of the Character Creation Forge builds, sort of organized in a way that's easily searchable, so you can quickly look up a build or see, what did we use Battlemaster Fighter with? What path could my character take?
So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill and let us know if there are any other rewards that you're interested in seeing, because right, we need some ideas.
And don't forget about the contest. If you pledge now, you will be entered in the giveaway in the raffle for the Pathfinder prizes. So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We'll be talking about the superhero problem.
You mean the Spider-Man problem? He's a menace. And get me pictures of him.
I thought you didn't know anything about superheroes.
I don't. What are we doing in the Character Creation Forge?
We're actually building Wonder Woman.
Yep, I don't have any jokes for her. So that's it for episode 112. Nope, that's it for episode 111 of Total Party Thrill. I hope it lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.